This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher Skis. Hello, hello, hello. How's everybody doing? I hope things are going well in your neck of the woods. This is the Out of Bounds podcast. My name's Adam Jabber, and I am your host. We have a special episode series for you today, or over the next however many days this takes, in collab with Protect Our Winters. If you don't know what Protect Our Winters is, it is a climate advocacy group in the U.S. here, and basically... And more than just the U.S., but we're specifically talking about the U.S. one right now. Protect Our Winters is a climate advocacy group, which is a very hard word to say for me. And we decided that we were going to do an episode series on voting and why it's important to vote specifically in this election in regards to our climate. Obviously, everyone's kind of sick about hearing... sick of hearing about voting. I know, like, everybody, every one of your favorite pro skiers is saying vote, and it's fine to be sick of it as long as you go and do it. Like, that's the main thing, right? Like, you actually have to go vote. You actually have to go make these changes. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to kind of highlight why it's important to vote, like, why, like, what are some of the reasons you should be voting, and why it's such a big push for POW specifically to vote in this election. Like, what does all of that mean? And what does it mean for our climate? So, without me babbling too much, this is now is the time for POW, and I hope you guys enjoy it. We're going to keep it simple this week, and no ads, no anything. We got three episodes back to back to back, and I hope you guys enjoy it. See ya. Troy, who are you? Tell people a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, hey everybody, my name is Troy Murphy, originally from Maine. I'm a mogul skier, so ended up making the U.S. ski team, moved out to Utah to kind of pursue that, and ended up skiing on the World Cup tour for 5 years, went to the Olympics in 2018, and now I'm kind of a more skiing for fun guy, backcountry skier, going to school, that whole deal.
What do you tell people you do now? Like, you're just, is that exactly what you say? You're like, I'm ski for fun guy now. Like, what do you do exactly?
I don't know. It's been interesting since I retired from competing. It's like changed every year, kind of. Like, the first year I was just a student, and then I like traveled all winter with a buddy. We just like skied all over like North America and West. So I would say at that point I was more of a skier. And then like last year I was the head coach of the Park City mogul team. So
yep.
I think then I became more of a coach and student, and now I've, I'd say more like a student and just kind of like doing these kind of part-time roles for the time being.
Yeah. Very cool. What is your season going to look like I have to ask you some of these questions. We're going to talk about Protect Our Winter stuff in a minute here. As people may or may not know by this point, I think this is going to be the third episode in the series. POW is kind of putting on this series about voting. It's like, now is the time for POW. I think they like these like fun monikers for everything, huh? Like, they like these like go vote type, like all these like names they come up with stuff out of the blue are very fun and catchy. But this one is called Now is the Time for POW, and we're going to talk about voting and Protect Our Winters and why it's important to vote. But I do want to ask you, like, what's your plan for the season? Like, are you going to be coaching? Are you going to be like, everything seem okay for skiing? Like, what's the deal?
Yeah. I might do a little bit of coaching here and there, but I'm going to try to keep it pretty open this winter. So, hoping to do like a little bit more like skiing for me and a little bit of like filming type stuff, with like Fisher will be cool.
Cool.
And then as far as like the winter plans, I'm a Alta guy, so I know that those guys are planning on being open, no restrictions, and I think they're anticipating it being super busy, obviously, on, like, holidays and weekends, so may try to, like, get up there more on the weekdays and then head into the backcountry on the weekends or, you know, whenever it's good out there.
And Alta's on Icon Pass, right?
They are. See, I'm not really the expert on those passes, but they are, but I think they only get a couple, you only get a couple days at Alta. I think you get like two or three at Alta, two or three at Snowbird. And then you get unlimited at Solitude, which is like another really good ski hill here in Utah.
Got it. Yeah, I was just wondering what it's going to be like traffic wise, because I'm seeing people like making plans. Like some people like really care about like taking precautions and not traveling and skiing local. And then I think there's like a big group of people that are just like, I want to go skiing. Like that's it. I don't care. Like we're outside. Like what's the big deal? Like, so I'm interested to see how they handle it.
And traffic's already been like a pretty big issue here.
Really?
Getting like Little Cottonwood and Big Cottonwood Canyon on a pow day is like just an absolute nightmare, like to begin with. And so I think they're expecting inflated numbers of people who want to ski. And then like their public transit bus, not that that many people took it before, but I think they're only going to run at like 25% capacity. And so it'll be a crazy one, I think, as far as, I think if you can get to the mountain and get on the lift, you're going to be good. But getting to the mountain and getting a parking spot might be the tricky part.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, okay, so you work with Protect Our Winters quite a bit. Why is it important for you? What is it that they do that was attractive to you when you were, I guess, when you guys started working together?
Yeah, so I kind of started to take notice of what they were doing while I was still competing, you know, because they obviously have a lot of athletes that are kind of like pushing their message, and that resonated with me quite a bit. And then their message is, you know, pretty much like, let's act on climate, let's be climate advocates and try to, you know, I think they take a pretty good approach at trying to do it on a political level, like especially years like now when it really matters. But they also do a lot of stuff like in maybe non-election years where still making an impact. You're mostly, I feel like the stuff that I've been doing has been pushing for some kind of climate or green energy initiative. But kind of getting back to your original question, why I got involved with them, was that when I was traveling, you know, and I was competing, we would travel to like the same places each year. And so like one of them would be Whistler. We would go to Whistler every summer. And from when I first started going there, when I was in like, I don't know, maybe a freshman in high school to like the last couple of years that I was doing it as a competitive athlete and as a coach, the glacier was like not recognizable. Sorry, my dog just came in here. The glacier is like not recognizable. Like when you first got there, there were like, I don't know, seven camps that spanned across the glacier. And by the time I left, like where there used to be camps on like the edges of the glacier, it was now like rocks. And you would get down to like glacial ice like really quick, like within a week or two of being there, you'd be like skiing on ice at the bottom, where like when you first got there, you would never see glacial ice. And I think I just saw this summer, they were not going to open, or they had to remove one of the T-bars because there wasn't enough snow to keep it up anymore. So that kind of thing, where I was traveling and seeing all these changes to the places I would go year after year, to me, like really drove it home. And that like is a direct threat to kind of my lifestyle, like what I've been able to do and the way I've grown up and the experiences I've had are under direct threat from climate change. And I think it's super important to try to push this message and do everything you can do to protect it for future generations, you know, future kids coming up that are trying to go train at Whistler or want to go to Europe and ski, you know, like I think that's super important.
Yeah. And one of the things that I've kind of heard about too is like people saying like, okay, well, so what? We can't go skiing. Like, yeah, your fun thing, we can't do anymore. Like, right. That's all that seems to be changing. Like that's what a lot, obviously that's not true, but like, that's what a lot of people are saying. Like, what is your response to those kind of things? Like, I mean, it has to impact more than just us, right?
Yeah. That's obviously like a very sheltered tunnel vision view at it. And that's how I got involved in the first, like, from the starting point, but it's got way bigger implications. The main one being like a water source. Like,
right.
Snow is the main water source, especially for places out west, like California and areas like Utah, anywhere out west where they rely heavily on snowpack as a water source for the whole year. That is directly under threat. And if, you know, obviously if we don't have water, then living becomes really challenging. That's a really big one. And then just climate change in general, like you're seeing the effects right now with all the fires in Colorado and California and, you know, the Pacific Northwest this summer, that's directly implicated from climate change. Oceans are warming up and that has really big implications. I was back in Maine a little bit ago and chatting with a scientist there, Seth Campbell, who was talking about how the warming oceans and acidification, which is the ocean soaks up some of that carbon in the atmosphere, that's having huge implications on Maine's seafood industry. And that's obviously like a huge economic driver there for tourism and things like that. So really this kind of like spans the whole, you know, the whole gamut. Maine's a great example for it because everything that Maine's economy kind of relies upon, or at least most of it, which is like fisheries, the hunting industry, lumber, like anything to do with the forest, skiing, winter tourism, snowmobiling, that all is kind of like reliant on a healthy environment, and that's all under threat from climate change. So that's kind of how I like to look at it, at least from a Maine standpoint. It like kind of runs the gamut of everything we enjoy and hold dear in that state.
Yeah. I actually got to talk to Seth on Friday. It's like, and it was crazy to listen to some of the things, like, and you're like, you're having a conversation, or at least I was having a conversation with him, and I was like, you're way smarter than me. Like, so like, I'm like going to take, you like can feel it when he's talking to you. And I think a lot of those guys, it's like, they are so focused on the thing and like their subject matter that they like, they know all the details that come at you with all the facts. So like, it's almost like overwhelming, like with all the information that's out there for it.
Yeah, for sure. I've been impressed talking to people like that about how, you know, they have all the science info and they can tell you all that, but they can also like really quickly tell you like what that effect is on the economy or what that effect is in like, you know, tax dollars from the snowmobile industry or something like that. Like they kind of like have looked around all the way around the topic.
Yeah. Yeah. And he did a good job, I think, about like actually like dumbing it down for somebody like myself to just understand like at a real simple level, like, okay, Seth, like this is what it is, right? Like this is what we're dealing with. What does that mean? He's like, it means we're not gonna have any water, like, and then like and stuff like that. It's like, it's really, it means the ice that was here is not here anymore. And I'm like, okay, perfect, thank you.
So
it's crazy that you've seen this stuff like in your skiing career, you know, like you've seen stuff like that impact is so fast. Like it's almost gotten to the point where like we need to make a change now or there's not going to be much of it left.
Yeah, no, it's crazy to think that like just in my short time, you know, doing this, what's that like maybe 10 years, there's been like that big of a change from like Whistler Glacier being completely packed with camps to like, obviously this year would have been different with COVID anyway, but like having to fully remove a T-bar and maybe not open because it's not enough snow in 10-year period. That's just insane to think about.
So why is it important to vote, especially in this election? Like, what does that do? I mean, because everybody's seeing their favorite pro skier posting on Instagram about like, go vote. And like, we're all saying it. And like, for somebody that's just sitting off on the sidelines that just likes recreational skiing or just like likes following their favorite pro, like why is that message so important? And so it seems like universal within the industry.
Yeah. So I think the first point is that like, if you like to do any of those things where you're recreating, like if you like to ski, if you like to snowmobile, if you like to fish, if you like to climb, like all these things are under threat from climate change and maybe not in your lifetime, but probably in your kid's lifetime. And so I think the first message is if you want to protect these things, we have to take action on climate. And there are a number of ways to do that. Like private industry has a hand in that. Individuals making small changes to their lifestyle has a hand in that. But none of them have as big of an impact as voting and as the impact that getting climate leaders in government can make. You know what I mean? Because like private industry can do as much as it wants, but to a certain point, they can't compete. Like if there's a company that's taking a lot of climate initiatives, they're going to at some point reach a ceiling where they can't compete with a company who doesn't really care about the climate and it's just, you know, polluting and doing whatever for profit. And so to get those two companies on a level playing field, you really need to have policy and regulation in place. And that only comes from government and that only comes from voting in climate leaders. So that's kind of the two reasons why it's important. One is because we want to, you know, protect the things we love, and that's POW's outdoor state. Like together, if you took all the recreationalists in the country, we're bigger than any individual state. And so if we all could vote behind electing climate leaders, then, you know, we could have major impacts.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the points that, and I'm going to say this again, like, I don't know if this episode is going to come out before it's asked or not, but one of the things we were talking about, like, is that it's important to vote on that, like, local level too for these kind of things, because that's like both local, like being like your mayors and that kind of stuff, which isn't necessarily this election. It might be in some areas, but it's, you know, we're talking right now Senate, and we're talking about like the president, but like everybody matters. Like voting from A to Z, like, and all those questions on the ballot actually really matter here, not just like whether you care about Trump or Biden.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, it's not obviously like presidential election gets a ton of you know, time in the limelight, which it should, because that's like obviously major implications. But there are, you know, many like local, state, you know, municipality votes, like kind of every level of government that can carry a lot of weight. Like even if you got your town to build more electric vehicle charging stations, or, you know, like my town in Bethel, I think they did like a plastic bag ban, which is pretty cool. So all those little, you know, those little votes in your town add up too. And certainly in your state, like Senate races are really big. House races are really big.
Yeah, for sure. I did also want to ask you about, so you got a chance to sit down and talk with Jeremy Jones last week about his new film, Purple Mountains. Is that what it's called, right? Purple Mountains?
Yep.
What was that like? And what was it like talking to someone like that who just like spent all this time like going to bat for climate too? You know, like, I mean, that's like what he's... a lot of the movies that he does are like snowboard focused, right? And there is an environmental impact in most of them, like, and he talks about that kind of stuff. But this one was like, he was really like getting in the face of people that don't agree with him and don't want to agree with him either, you know? Like, I thought that was really interesting. Like, what was that conversation like?
Yeah, it was super cool for me. He, you know, I really kind of like looked up to him for a long time, originally just because of his snowboarding. Like,
yeah.
When I started watching his films was like kind of when I was getting into like some of the more backcountry type skiing and like skiing in Alaska. So I was like, this guy's out of his mind. But yeah. Then, you know, as like the climate message came more and more in, you know, I started to jump on board with that. And so he's been kind of a role model in, you know, his ability to take his passions, turn it into like, you know, climate activism, like doing it for the right reasons, and just has like cultivated a really cool lifestyle for himself in the mountains. So it was super cool to talk to him. And then I think this new Purple Mountains film is like something that, you know, at least us in the ski and snowboard industry, we've never really seen before, where snowboarding happens in it, but it's more about like the climate stuff. And it's more about chatting with these people and finding some common ground, you know, around their interests. So that's one thing that I am always curious about, is I'm not like, if you talk to me, I'm not like a super polarizing guy. Like I like to talk with anybody, like any, you know, whatever side of the political aisle or whatever your beliefs are. Like, I think that I can usually like have a conversation. We can find some common interest. And, you know, Jeremy obviously really put that on display in that movie, where he's chatting with people who are maybe not climate deniers, but they may be skeptics. And at the end of the day, you know, when they're done with their conversation, they can both be like, hey, you know, we both agree that this is happening. Maybe we disagree about how we can find solutions, but at least let's take this conversation forward instead of just arguing about the existence of something, like whether climate change is real or not. At the end of the day, everyone kind of was on board. Yeah, it's real.
Yeah.
So super cool opportunity to get to chat with him. We had pretty interesting, similar backgrounds, as he like went to CVA, Carabasso Valley Academy in Maine, and was a competitive snowboarder and kind of saw those changes happening there. And then like, obviously his backcountry career is really what brought him into like the climate light of seeing the implications. And kind of my story was a little bit similar to that, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the most impressive part for me about it was like in the, like his ability to like stay calm and actually ask questions and like keep having that conversation, even when someone was like, no, I don't think you're right. Like, I think you're wrong. Like, I straight up don't agree with you at all. And he's just like stay calm. Like, and he's like pushing through and like kind of trying to get his point across in a very level way, which is like the complete opposite of what we see like in the political debates recently. It's funny because I was watching that and then I was watching the debates like the day after, and I was like, this is supposed to be just a guy that snowboards, you know, like, and he's able to have like a legitimate, like thoughtful conversation. And I thought that was extremely impressive.
Yeah, for sure. It was interesting. Kind of his approach. He like talked to very staunch climate deniers that are like in the media a lot. And obviously his approach with them was just kind of like getting them to chat. And he wasn't going to argue too much, because I think those people are probably like not worth your time. Like, you're probably not going to change their talking points. But then when he talked to like the real people, you know, the people who live in like town, the people who like to hunt or snowboard, there he was able to have like an honest conversation and kind of like they could both, like, a little bit of give and take and come out with, like, an outcome rather than just, like, you know, with the staunch climate denier dudes, he just kind of let them talk, and then on the back end did all the research and was like, this is why that's not true.
Right.
In real time to other people. So I thought that was interesting. Kind of like your tact about how you talk with people who are maybe opposing your views.
Yeah, I thought it was very well put together. But anyway, all right. Thank you for your time. This has been great. Where can people find you on social media, and anything else that you want to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram primarily, Troy_Murphy. I'm trying to think what else I've got going on, but that's about it right now. I've got a buddy, Donnie Pelletier, 207, who's a main character that, you know, we all know and love. And so those are the two places that you can find Troy or Troy-related content.
Beautiful. All right, buddy.